and here we go with another edition of We Talk Wrestling with Addy and Mo. Hey, yo, I'm Addy.
Hey. Hey, hey. Yo, I'm Mo.
And, well, Mo, a little bit happened in the last week here in the world of professional wrestling. One thing, though, that after Monday Night Raw, I thought was maybe the sort of the biggest thing that I took away from Raw after it was over on Monday is that, Mo, if you jumped off a bridge, it would also be good for the business.
Well, it couldn't hurt business.
That's true.
That's true. Yeah, but of course, if I jumped off the bridge, am I landing in water or am I landing on the pavement? Because that'd be a little clean up.
Well, see, originally you would land on water, but the fact that you're so fat would mean that all the water would probably be gone from the lake.
Ah, well, that's okay.
Yeah.
That's okay. Global warming, we blame it on that.
Yes. Fucking Al Gore.
Well, anyways, because of technical difficulties, we were unable to record our usual Thursday show. Technical and
constraints.
Yeah, we have hailstorms and all sorts of shit here in Calgary. We are ready to go, though, with like 4 billion topics, dude. So why don't you hit the first one? I'll give you the first thing. Why don't you throw it out? Want to talk about Raw?
We can talk about Raw. We can talk about what happened in terms of trying to think of the word, and I'm coming up with shitty episode of Monday Night Raw. I mean, a few things that I liked, but on the whole, I just sort of sat back and went, yeah, okay, well, my money in the bank high is done. I'm back jonesing for some more shit here.
Yeah, you know what, it's because you were more excited for Raw after SummerSlam than I was.
Mm-hmm.
And I was worried about Nash and Punk.
Well, I loved that. That was the thing that I loved. I mean, it drew absolutely no money, but I just sat back and I thought it was hilarious.
Yeah, no, it drew no money. It was entertaining, but it's leading to a match.
Yes, it is. And that is going to be...
Shit.
You know,
now here's about the match with Nash and Punk. Punk is obviously, I like the way he came across, like he's not afraid of Nash, and why the hell would he be?
Wow.
I mean,
the only way I could see you being afraid of Nash is in a way like when you're still you're a grown man, you're 30 years old, but you're still afraid of your grandpa?
Yeah. Yeah, well, he's dying his hair now.
He is, clearly.
He is, clearly. But the other thing is that Nash has canceled a bunch of his indie dates. Not all of them.
No.
But a bunch around this area about this time period. So he is apparently, though, going to have to pass a physical in order to actually receive a WWE performer contract because he's on a legend right now.
Good.
Nash has, again, I'm going to repeat, Nash has to pass a physical.
Yeah, I'm trying to, but here's the thing is, and I don't know, you know, is he, isn't he, you know, in terms of you know, what kind of designer drugs or juiced upness that he's got, but in terms of, if you're talking physical in terms of, you know, his body holding up to whatever it's going to hold.
That, it wasn't even going to go to the other thing, because obviously people have already found a way around that, so
mm-hmm.
I'm not even worried about that.
But I look at, you know, when you talk about his body holding up, you know, to what have you, I mean... Undertaker's employed.
Yeah, but when's the last time he had to pass a physical?
Well, that's true. That's true.
Chief employment. I mean, who knows? I know Undertaker's employed, but I think it's a little bit different. Undertaker has never actually taken a step into the ring, blown something, and ruined an angle.
No, that's true.
That's
true. But who knows? I mean, and if he does, I mean... The thing is here is at least now it's leading to a match. Well, at this point.
Well, that's why I hope the match doesn't happen.
Well, at this point, it doesn't have to lead to a match at this point from what they've said. I mean, it looks that way, but they can easily take it in another way at this point. So if he doesn't pass the physical, you're right. That probably is a good thing.
Yeah, it would be a good thing, I think. Because I just. Like I say, I don't see how Punk can benefit from this. Because he can't have can he have a one-star match with Kevin Nash, like, at this point in his career? I mean, we were able to see, like, a Samoa Joe in there with him. And Samoa Joe, frankly, is a better in-ring hand than Punk. And he wasn't able to have a good match with him.
Well, that's true. And I mean, I'm not anticipating anything good at all out of that.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyways, what else? Though, let's talk about the actual promo, because it was the highlight of Raw.
It definitely was the highlight of Raw. Finding out, of course, many things, such as CM Punk enjoys Waffle House.
You know what? I like Waffle House.
I've only been there once, but I
a lot of wheat in those waffles.
I would think you would enjoy that then, yes.
Yeah, I do.
But I'm trying to think of, you know, in terms of the promo itself, you know, his big, if you want to call it the inside reference, although I like the way it was phrased, was, of course, the vanilla midget for Eddie Guerrero.
God, I was waiting. That was awesome, because somebody deserved to nail that idiot Nash. And the way he said it, you know, the legendary Eddie Guerrero.
Well, I like the way that he said it in that, like, this is the guy that called the legendary Eddie Guerrero a vanilla midget.
Exactly. To me, I thought even if nobody heard that story, had never heard that, as soon as they hear that, if they remember him, unless they've been around since, what, 2005 when he passed?
Right.
You know, but even then, I mean, you probably heard of Eddie Guerrero. So, I mean, if people have heard of him, I think that was enough to get that point across.
Oh, I was going to say, the thing is you don't have to have been around in 1997 or 1996, right, to hear that line and for it to mean something. So it means more if you know the story.
Yeah.
But you don't have to know the story for that. So I like that it was inside but done in a way that, you know, it was clear to everyone.
Yeah, and you know what? Nash had no comeback. Like, literally, Nash, he was just sitting there, hands over the rope, looking at him.
Yeah.
He had no comeback at all because it was perfect.
Oh, Nash looked like it was hilarious watching Nash just be completely owned.
He was. He was completely owned.
And after all the years of you know, just going in on Nitro and you know, just doing whatever he wants.
The Arn Anderson thing, right?
Well, I mean, the Arn Anderson thing, I mean, that's one thing, and that was funny. But, I mean, I think of just him being able to go in the ring and would absolutely hear Nash go in the ring for 10 minutes and talk. That's all they did, right? Back on Nitro, because there wasn't a format. I mean, you hear the Bobby Heenan telling stories about, you know, there wasn't a format until, you know, halfway through hour two. They would be given. So, I mean, so this is, you know, I don't call it payback, but it was just funny and ironic to see the...
I wouldn't call it payback. It was karma. And Nash was a bitch.
It definitely, yes. It was a pregnant black woman.
Yes. It was. With a with child black woman.
Yes.
Which one of those two would you think would have knocked her out first? Probably Punk. He's fucked everyone.
I don't know. Nash and that red wine.
That's true. Anyways, it was great. A lot of people are talking about how they went over the audience's head, but I don't really think that's a big deal. I mean, at the end of the day, the idea was, I don't like you, you don't like me, and both of them basically sitting there going, I've got no problem kicking your ass, and both of them not being afraid of each other. So that's fine. Now, what about the other part of Nash's promo, though? Between him and Hunter. What do you think is going on there?
You mean in terms of the text message?
Yes.
Well, just to finish up on Punk, you know, I like that you say, you know, why don't we fight? I don't like you. You don't like me. I got no problem fighting you. I have no problem. But the heel then, whether, you know, and again, it's still a little bit of the mystery there as to where this came from, but then the guards come out, the police come out and surround Nash. So Punk can't get to him. So the heel, and Nash is just looking all arrogant and cocky, and that's really when he sort of took it up a notch to go, yeah, come on, right? Like, you know he's in on it, but you don't know who he's in on it with, but it's the thing is, you know, that was good because it clearly established who the heel and who the babyface was.
Yeah.
You know? Not that, you know, Nash got any sort of real reaction whatsoever when he came out anyway.
He didn't come out. He was announced as, you know, the longest reigning champion of the 90s. I mean, I thought the announcer did a good job to those people who may not be familiar with him of explaining who he is. Obviously, he's a huge dude, so there's that. He talked about being the godfather, Hunter's the godfather of his son, so it established that. I think that is a little confusing for people because Hunter's still way over as a face, and this guy isn't. And not everybody saw SummerSlam, so not everybody who came out there knew why he was there, what was going on. But no music. This was not the Boston crowd. I think it was Boston
at the Rumble, yeah.
This is not that Boston crowd. They talk about how people at the Royal Rumble actually will travel to the Royal Rumble like they do with Mania, but it's even a more hardcore crowd traveling.
Right.
No music, not Diesel. Kevin Nash came out, and people didn't know how to take to it at first. But
I was really interested with the no music.
Yeah.
And in hindsight, I think that was a mistake because the no music would have drowned out a little bit of the apathy.
Yeah, I agree with that.
But unless they're working on some...
They obviously expected a much bigger reaction.
Well, but again, it's a situation... I don't know how you could have expected a much bigger reaction, considering...
Well, he's a legend.
Yes, but he's a legend that just planted, you know, your hottest babyface.
Yeah, that's right.
Right? So, I mean...
Expect at least a heel reaction.
Yeah, but then
he's a legend. I mean, and they're presenting him like he's on the level of an Austin or Bret Hart or Shawn Michaels. He's not.
No, he's not. I mean, he's just... I mean, Kevin Nash's favorite wrestler is actually John Bradshaw Layfield because he allowed Nash to no longer be called the lowest drawing WWF champion of all time.
Yeah, exactly. Only the lowest drawing of the 90s, man.
Yes, and somehow the longest reigning.
Yes.
He was.
They didn't want to have to put that belt back on Brett when they did, but they did. They knew they had to.
Yeah,
that's another thing, though. I mean, what about the line, I got you the guaranteed contract? Revisionist history? Bullshit? Just an angle for the storyline? What do you think that is?
Well, I mean, but that's something that, you know, again, that, and even watching the, I don't know if they mentioned it on the NWO roundtable or not, but I mean, that is something that Nash believes. And then when you talk about revisionist history, I mean, he has somewhat of a point. Is that Hall and Nash, were the first to get the guaranteed contracts, but in the Monday Night Wars, they were really the first. To be sort of lured away with guaranteed money.
From that side, I mean, some people were lured away about the same time from WCW over to the WWF, then WWF as well with guaranteed contracts. So.
Well, I mean, Mark Merrill, Brian Pillman after, but really Hall and they really did set kind of the precedent. And it wasn't so much, I don't think, and that's the revisionist history part, is I don't know so much that it was the guaranteed contract, so much it was the amount of the guaranteed money.
Yeah, that's probably true. That's probably true.
And even still, I mean, Vince never went full guarantee with the downside, right? So when they talk about guaranteed money, it's like, well, it increased because of them. I'll give them that.
Okay. I'll give you that. Okay. I really didn't have a problem with it. I just thought of something to bring up.
It was an interesting kind of point that, I mean, isn't entirely true, but, I mean, it is, but I said, it is something that Nash, I've heard him say before, you know, on your RF videos and your just in general. I think even when he did that thing with Alex Shelley on TNA, I think he mentioned it.
That was great. If anybody has an opportunity to go back and watch the when he was first the mentor to the X Division in TNA, he's sitting there and you got like Alex Shelley and I think Petey Williams was there and Low-Key and all these guys talking about how he's the drawing champion of the 90s, and he's got this chart putting himself up there with like the Austin and he's like, I'm not quite as awesome enough. The Rock I'm equal with.
No, he didn't. He said he was the highest, and then business tapered off for some guy named Steve Austin.
Oh, that's right.
That was what it was. He basically inverted the chart, is what he did.
It was one of the funniest skits TNA's ever done.
It was, yeah.
You know, people could actually, probably on YouTube somewhere, everything is, and, you know, seek that out. And seek out our interview with DDP while you're at it.
Yeah. But,
yeah, which, speaking of which, is probably the funniest thing that DDP ever did. A lot.
That's true. But, all right, well, I think that pretty much, the only other thing from Raw that I thought was noteworthy, well, there was, I guess, two other things I thought was noteworthy. One mm-hmm. was kind of, and this ties into another point that I had, was Jack Swagger.
Yeah.
Wanting to have the managerial services of the someone who I'm pretty sure going forward will no longer be called Fat, Vicky Guerrero.
She will not be, because since you referenced it, I'll just mention that there's been further discussion with groups talking about WWE bullying and calling her fat, and there's been, you know, asking to no longer be associated with their Be a Star program, and
yeah.
And now they've kind of cut back on that some. But anyways, it is, I think it's going to be too politically incorrect for anybody to refer to that way, which is going to be difficult for Jerry Lawler.
Well, now there is that
Ziggler had the great line, you know, everybody at this table, she's got the best and second best shape, and Lawler, of course, with his clever 1950s comedy goes, yes, well, even a pear has a shape, right?
It's a situation where a group has pulled out to be a star, citing the fact specifically
they've retracted that.
Oh, have they retracted?
They have retracted that. They have said we might have overreacted early. That it might be more important for programming, which is not real, to be going against all the good work that is being done by the WWF with this.
Yeah.
It's just want them to be more aware of it with their program.
Yeah, and so, nevertheless, it won't be mentioned.
Yeah, exactly. So, anyways, as far as her being the manager of Swagger, I mean, I guess that's going to turn Ziggler face, and I got no problem with that. I'd love to watch those two have a program with each other.
Yeah.
I do think it's really stupid that, I remember how I've always said, I'm not high on Alex Riley, and he's not ready, and he's not that good, and then he screws up in the ring, and all the heat on it from the announcers.
Yes.
Like, immediately after, he doesn't go up properly for the doctor bomb, for the Swagger finisher. And then immediately afterwards, they're like, man, did you see the way Swagger got him up? So strong, right? Like, how much power does this guy have?
Yeah, and I know. And
the next match, I mean, they're basically calling him for fucking it up, calling him out for it, even though he didn't fuck it up, number one. And number two, how can he fuck up a finisher? It's supposed to be real, right? But, I mean, there was almost breaking kayfabe in that moment, too, just to bury the guy.
Yeah, I know. Because he's JR's boy.
Yeah, well, that's it.
And that was
You know what? You know what? You're right. I didn't think about that. But you're right. That's what it is, isn't it?
Yeah, they're Oklahoma. And the thing is, I mean, that was the same. I mean, that was the most absolutely stupid shit when she grabs the hat and puts it on the referee's head. And I'm just like, fuck off. Like, I just, immediately, I just didn't want to watch the show anymore. It was that kind of just like, you know, because the show hadn't really been captivating me up to that point outside of the Nash Punk thing. And, you know, and so it's just like, okay, I can be done with this now.
Yeah. What about the match, though, the main event match with Del Rio and Rey?
It was good. I did like the fact that they played the Mysterio title wins throughout the show, his three title wins. You know, to show, you know, he's got the title, blah, blah, right? And put it out. So, I mean, it looks like Del Rio, you know, beat someone. Not that you wouldn't think that anyway, but it helped to drive the point home, right? So, I always say, you know, it's somebody's first time watching the show, right? So, you know, it's just good there. You know, and they did the thing to apparently Mysterio hurt himself during that match.
Ah.
Re-hurt his knee. Like, he had already got his knee MRI, and now they have to do another MRI on it because they hurt it even more in that match. So I don't know that we're going to be seeing Ray Ray for quite a while.
Yeah, well, what they did at the end of the match, was that beat down enough of an injury angle, or?
I think so, yeah. I think it is. I mean, he used his arm breaker, didn't he?
Yeah.
And then Hogan came down for the save, right?
Yeah, Hogan came down for the save. Let's speak about that. I had my issue. It was a little bit of a strange that John Cena came down. He challenges Del Rio for the title. Okay, so he's getting a shot at Del Rio instead of Punk and whatever. At the house show loop, it appears that he's defending against both of them the same night, which is kind of interesting.
Yeah.
But let's talk about what Cena said. His delivery was really good. He said it with a lot of passion. But a little bit earlier, CM Punk, the babyface, goes, I don't have a problem with what Del Rio did. I did the same thing and would have done the same thing.
That's right.
Then Cena comes out the other top babyface and goes, what he did was completely wrong and immoral, and nobody should ever have done that, even though everybody's done that except for one person.
That's right.
And I thought he came across his character. His delivery was great. His character, I thought, came across really poorly.
Yeah. Like a whiny bitch.
Like a whiny bitch, yeah.
And, I mean, the thing is, when I called him Hogan, that was a Hogan thing.
Yeah.
You know, where, you know, like the things, that would be something that, you know, if Jesse Ventura was there, you know, he'd be pointing out, you know, oh, what are you talking about, McMahon? He's got the right to do it whenever he wants, right?
Yeah.
Just like Punk did. And that would be something that, you know, that Hogan, you'd hear him, you know, complain about and something, and it'd be like, well, yeah, just suck it up. But
now, obviously, they had scripted this for Cena, and they didn't, I don't think, script the Punk and Nash stuff, right? So maybe they didn't know he was doing that. He still had an hour to adjust his promo and didn't. I think he came across really
poorly. His lines were memorized already. That would be too difficult.
That would be too difficult.
But no, I mean, that was my first thing, is, oh, you cash it in, I can't believe how cowardice, and blah, blah, blah. And all I'm thinking here now is two things. We got a whiny bitch in John Cena. And then my second thought was, you know, sort of one of those best of time, worst of time situations is, fuck Cena again?
Well, yeah, that's the other thing is, I'm looking at Del Rio, and I'm going, okay, you got a new champion.
Yeah.
Great. And instead of letting me go, okay, you got a new champion, let's see how he does, it's, you got a new champion, and how long before he loses it?
Well, the thing
there's that inevitable, well, he's going to lose it to Cena, it's just a matter of when, so why the fuck should I care about his title reign?
Well, we know when. I mean, they're going to Mexico in October, right?
Yeah. So November.
So, Madison Square Garden.
Yeah.
Cena, and I don't have a problem with this, to be quite honest, is Cena holds the belt high, and then cue if you smell what The Rock is cooking.
Yeah, I suppose. It'll be a great moment.
If you're going to do that, I honestly don't have a problem with that, because what it does is it gives Del Rio a little bit of a run with the belt. It should give Del Rio... Cena will probably win. Now that I say that, Cena will actually probably win by disqualification at Night of Champions with Ricardo Rodriguez getting involved for him to take the FU. I can already picture this in my head.
Yeah.
You know, because you wouldn't want to actually put anyone over strong. What should happen is Del Rio, you know, wins, and then they do a rematch in October where he wins by cheating, and
that's
then...
Cool, though. I mean, how do you do that?
What do you mean?
Hell in the Cell.
It doesn't have to be, though.
No, I suppose it doesn't have to be. Well, what is Hell in the Cell? Just a SmackDown match, or...?
Yeah, you could do it. I mean, who knows? I mean, you Punk and Nash.
Hell in the Cell?
Hell in the Cell.
Can Mick Foley be the special referee?
That would be buys.
It wasn't last time when it was Mick Foley, Nash, and Triple H.
Well, but then they could, because then they could continue the streak of climbing to the top of the cell.
That's true. That's true. And you find, well, I guess that's why you need Punk in there, so you have somebody whose knees can actually climb to the top of the cell.
No, you have both of them climb, and that's how the feud continues, because it then turns into a one-hour draw.
That's possible too.
Yes.
It's a little bit. Well, maybe they only have one Hell in a Cell match, but I mean, it's a Hell in a Cell pay per view. I think, haven't they usually done 2 to 3 Hell in a Cell matches at this event?
I think they've done about 3, and I think you. I mean, you still. I'm just trying to think of feuds that are still, you know, out there. And,
yeah.
You know, I think maybe. I mean, the Orton Christian. Hell in a Cell is a possibility. Sheamus and someone could go into Hell in a Cell. Mark Henry.
Mark Henry's getting the next title shot.
What about Mark Henry and Kane?
Mark Henry's getting the next title shot at Orton, though, and Orton has said, at least in his interview he did recently with this last week on Fox Station. That he and Christian are done. So, I mean, what do you think? Is it done? Are they doing that? Christian and Orton at Hell in a Cell?
I don't think that they necessarily consult with Randy Orton every time they change their mind.
Yeah, I guess so.
I just, you know. I mean, if it is done, it's done. Then I guess you're doing Henry and Orton Hell in a Cell then. I mean, we didn't say these had to be good.
No, and that wouldn't be.
And Christian and Sheamus, Hell in a Cell. I don't know. But
yeah.
It's just, you know, or you know, you've got R-Truth and Morrison or something, right? I mean, who knows? But
well, you could see that multiple man, six man type Hell in a Cell match or something.
Is Homicide available?
Well, he is, but he's going to start trying to get out of the Hell in a Cell today.
Yes.
And he should be getting out just by the time the event is over.
He's going to get down just as Nash gets up.
Yeah.
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 So that'll be good.
That'll be good.
Yeah. So, but I mean, that was Raw. I mean,
yeah.
I don't really have much interest in tomorrow night's Raw. I guess we should. The one thing we didn't talk about was the. John Laurinaitis again and Stephanie McMahon all kind of playing a part. You know, Triple H denying the text message being sent. Stephanie telling Punk that, you know, everybody gets what they deserve. And, and John Laurinaitis wanting to, you know, talk to Kevin Nash, right? So,
by the way, she would know because she has herpes.
Yes. Well, and I mean, I had sort of thought all along, I mean, it's not out of the realm of possibility, obviously, for Stephanie to be able to pick up her husband's cell phone, right, and text Nash.
No, yeah.
Say, hey, stick the winner, right? So
easy enough, yeah.
And then for her to be in cahoots with Laurinaitis, you know, that's...
I think it's a little bit strange, though, because Stephanie never worked as a babyface and never will. She's a heel. She's got that McMahon persona. That you just can't help but boo her.
Well, why do you think she'd be a babyface?
Well, this is what I'm saying is, let me finish this thought. She's got that thing where she's definitely a heel. If she's married to Hunter is a babyface. At some point in time, you can't have the husband be the babyface and the wife be the heel. I don't think.
What? How many married friends do you have? How many married friends do you have?
You're right, all the women are heels, is that what you're saying?
Just saying, not all of them.
Well, there's something to be said for that.
There is.
But I just think at some point in time it's going to be odd to have Hunter feuding with his wife because we've been there already a billion times. I just don't think they can go back that direction. They have to be on the same page. Which means that Hunter probably has to turn heel, and that's probably what's coming. So,
well, it is Yeah, no, that is a possibility that happens. I mean, you never know. I mean, I could see it again with the whole. We talk about the soap opera writers coming in. That they're hiring soap operators. I mean, that's what this is, right? This is a soap opera.
This is the
families involved. There's the evil executive, henchman guy. There's the friend from the past that comes in, and nobody quite knows what's going on yet, who's screwing over who, and who's doing what, and who's behind it, and all that stuff. And there's a million different ways that everything can then unravel, right? So, Hunter can turn heel with the wife. They can go down the marital issue situation where it's Stephanie and Laurinaitis against the clique, for God's sakes, right?
Yeah.
And then they can go into the divorce angle where Hunter loses it all, right? He has to put up the ring, and there's a million ways they can go.
Yeah.
So it's who knows, right? So we'll just sort of let it play out. That story itself, to me, I don't want to say that it's piquing my curiosity or having my, it's not gotta tune into Raw, but it is the thing on the show that I guess I'm most interested in.
Okay. All right, let's talk about SmackDown. We are going to see the next Tuesday tapings here in Calgary.
Yes.
So we'll have the opportunity to see it live. We'll be doing a show immediately after with spoilers and such for people.
Yes.
Take care to them. We'll be texting out spoilers and putting those up in different places as well. Now, are you interested in anything going on in that show? We talked about Henry and Orton. We talked about, I think that's about all we talked about. So yeah. How did you feel about SmackDown this week when you watched it?
It was there. It's there, and that's the whole. That's really the whole thing with SmackDown. I mean, when Trent Barretta and Johnny Curtis and William Regal are in a battle royal. Yeah, not a different way we could go about that.
Yeah, that's true. It's lazy booking to use a battle royal again.
And Mark Henry, okay, fine, that's the deal. He wins the battle, But in terms of what am I looking forward to on SmackDown, I don't know that anything's even announced for SmackDown.
I'm looking forward to that.
Which?
The dark match.
Well, the dark match, yes, of Randy Orton and Christian in a street fight with Bret the Hitman Hart as a special guest referee. That'll be good, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah, exactly.
But, you've got your Cody Rhodes as the Intercontinental Champion. I like that.
I'm going to say that the other thing which I think has some interest for me for SmackDown is Mystico Hunica, the Sin Cara saga, so to speak.
Yeah.
Sin Cara, the last couple of weeks, has been portrayed by Hunica. Hunica? How do you pronounce it?
Hunico, yeah. Hunico Rana. But actually, last night, it was Mystico.
It was Mystico. And it seems that they have... Now, Hunica was the most over guy the last SmackDown tapings, more over than Orton, as Sin Cara, which
right.
says they don't need the other guy. Maybe it wouldn't last that way. Maybe it would be exposed. But after a couple of appearances, he's wildly over. But it does appear that they were maybe building towards a Sin Cara versus Sin Cara. If they are, then we're going to see the storyline laid down probably Tuesday night here in Calgary. I think that could be. Apparently, those two really hate each other because they're both known as Mystico in Mexico.
Really?
Hunica actually was known as Mystico first technically, but there's some dispute over who the real first Mystico was, and they really don't like each other in real life.
Nice.
And then they have to work with each other. But style-wise, and just concept of feud-wise for Sin Cara, I like this idea. So what do you think?
If we are going to get the seeds planted for the Mystico or for the Sin Cara versus Sin Cara feud on Tuesday, then I, for one, am looking forward to the return of Paul Bearer.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, yes. But, no, that'd be, I mean, you know what, when you say that, though, the Hunico Mystico deal there, I mean, that sort of reminds me of, you know, of on a sort of a smaller scale, but, you know, the Bret Hart, Shawn Michaels situation. You know, these guys have to work together, but they hate each other.
Yeah, yeah.
Which I guess that'll all play out in October.
Yeah, so.
On DVD.
On DVD. You want to go there? You want to go there next?
Hey,
Are we done with SmackDown then?
Yeah, I was done with SmackDown about 5 minutes ago.
Sounds good. Well, I'm going to, first off, I just want to, because we've got so many billions of quick hits here, that I wanted to get to this one. You'll have to bear with me because I have literally, I would say, 400 billion notes.
Really?
That's literally. That's not even. But so I'm just going to get to this here regarding Bobby Heenan. Bobby Heenan is going to be at the Wrestle Reunion event in Miami, the weekend of WrestleMania.
Yeah.
The TMR promotion book. And I just want to say to everybody, Bobby Heenan is going to be there. His health has not been good of late. Go see him, because when the wrestling history books are written, he'll go down as one of the top five, if not higher, most talented people that have ever been in this industry. So I just wanted to get that out there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and he lives in Florida, isn't he? So I believe he lives in Tampa area, so not a big distance for him to be traveling either, which is good, probably the reason that he's agreed to do that, too. So
we might have to talk about whether or not we'll be attending WrestleMania this year. We would have to talk about it at some point, and maybe this is the year, but if so, we're going to go see Bobby Heenan.
Oh, definitely, yes.
Definitely. Okay, the Bret Hart versus Shawn Michaels DVD. Number one, the cover has been released, and it looks like it's them from about 1995, 1996, so somewhere in that range. It's horrible cover, I think.
You know, in terms of going to see Bobby Heenan, you may not be able to go because you said his health isn't good, and I don't want to scare him because he may think you're gorilla.
Well, then he'd love me. He'd love me. Oh, you know what? That would be awesome. Maybe we could do a YouTube video of Bobby Heenan meets Fat Gorilla Monsoon.
Fat Gorilla Monsoon, yes. Gorilla Monsoon, at his peak weight 440, and you would be Fat Gorilla Monsoon.
Anyways, let's talk about the Bret Hart. Like I said, the Bret Hart DVD, first off, is a horrible cover, I think. But either way, the contents have been released. You can find this on Amazon. Let's talk about the chapters of the first disc here, and I'll get your if you want to just basically, I'm going to read these out, and if there's anything that sounds interesting to you,
jump
in. Okay? The first chapter is San Antonio versus Calgary. Second chapter, The Rockers versus the Hart Foundation.
Nice. See, yeah. that's good, because that really will lay the backstory into how long these guys, you know, from the late 80s, you know, we're both in the company together, and obviously they'll have to be going through the tag team, the Phantom tag team title change that never happened.
Yeah, that's, you know, right.
From when the rope broke there on the Saturday Night's Main Event.
Yeah, so tell the story. Tell it a little more detail there.
Well, they taped it. I'm trying to remember what it was. I want to say it was in Dayton, Ohio, or it was in Indianapolis. I don't remember the, but it was, they were taping for a Saturday Night's Main Event, which of course they taped everything just, you know, months in advance, and no internet, no. You know, spoilers there. So they taped it, but what had happened is because Jim the Anvil Neidhart was going to give his notice, or his contract was up, and they weren't going to renew him. They had, so they switched the tag titles to the Rockers, but in the match, the top rope actually broke.
Mm-hmm.
So they'd wrestled the match with two ropes, essentially, and, well, in the meantime and in between time, at the time that in between the time this was going to air, and when the match actually happened, Jim Neidhart re-signed, and they decided to keep the tag titles on the Hart Foundation, and they only did like a quick little market specific for wherever it had aired, to say, you know, with Jack Tunney there saying, you know, due to the fact that the top rope broke, you know, we thrown out the match, and therefore the tag title change is not being recognized.
Yeah, yeah. This is quite a big deal of being made of that in the after mags at the time. It's really where people really got a chance to hear about it, and other than that, not much else. But.
That's right, yeah.
So anyways, the next chapter is Heartbreak Kid versus the Hitman.
Okay.
Then Intercontinental Champion versus WWE Champion.
Right, that's Survivor Series 92.
Showstopper versus Excellence of Execution.
Okay, so that would be building up, what do you think that would go probably to 97 then?
To me, that's Iron Man match.
I guess so, but he really, you know, he was calling himself the Showstopper, really not so after that, but I mean, I guess you could do that, yeah?
Well, the next chapter is Progressive versus Traditional.
Oh, Progressive, okay, so that would be your DX versus Hearts kind of, yeah, okay.
Yeah, versus reality. Fantasy versus reality, then respect vs. trust, then redemption versus reconciliation, or whatever you would call it.
Sunny days.
That's it. And then the final chapter is hope versus peace.
Right, okay.
Okay. So I think that's not just matches and commentary. It looks like an actual documentary on their career, too.
Well,
I wasn't sure that was coming, and that's going to be wicked, but... what was it, a 4-hour interview that JR conducted with the two of them?
With both of them together. Not
yeah.
Like one-on-ones, but they sat down together, side by side. All three of them, yeah.
Bret Hart just had it recently here. He had an interview in this last week with, I think it was Monday Night Mayhem.
Wrestling Voice, I believe.
Wrestling Voice, okay. Where he talked about how he and Sean have really become good friends since then. I think that's awesome. I'm really happy to hear that.
Yeah.
You know, the other thing that he thought the match with him versus Vince was perfect, that he loved having his family out there, and the fans got to see what they wanted. So he must have heard how people did not like that match, and I don't know if he just won't admit it to himself or what the deal is there.
Yeah, you know. But the thing is, I mean, in terms of, I don't know if he talked about fans got what they wanted, you know, and I don't know how much of it is when he says fans got what they wanted, I mean, how many people are going to walk up to Bret Hart and go, "Your match sucked"?
Yeah, but he must have heard the rumbling somewhere. He must have. I don't know. I don't think anybody would say that, but yeah.
No, but when he says, "I think the fans got what they want," he's probably going by on the feedback people have given him to his face.
Yeah, I suppose.
And I could see that, and for him saying, you know, it was good. I mean, he got what he wanted out of it, right? Which was the closure.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
and so that's just it. He also said that
from that perspective, I got the closure from it too, and more closure, like I say, between him and Sean, that was more important to me. So as a fan, so yeah, I mean that's good, but as a match,
shit. Yeah, and he also said that he wants to have Randy Savage and Owen Hart in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, exactly. He said and he's right on both of those.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay. And, I'm just going to move on to disc two here. Because it says on the Amazon thing, it shows two disc sets, but they have listings for three discs, and it looks like it's going to be three discs. So.
Okay.
The Rockers vs. the Hart Foundation from Madison Square Gardens on November 25th, 1989.
Okay.
Which will be fantastic. Bret Hart versus Shawn Michaels from Wrestling Challenge.
Okay.
February 1990.
They'll probably have the ladder match, won't they?
Well, this is about 3 months, about 3 months later that they had a singles match with the show on there. So then they have another Rockers versus Hart Foundation match from a year later, March 30th, 1991, from the Tokyo Dome. And I don't know if you've seen that match, but that one was fantastic.
I have not, no.
Big match. Then they have the ladder match, the first ever ladder match.
Excellent.
One year later, actually about 15 months later, July 21st, 1992.
With the red ladder.
The IC title, yep, Red Ladder. It's very interesting to watch this. It's the first ladder match in the WWF. At the time, it blew my mind, and now it doesn't seem like much, just because so much has been done with ladders.
Yeah.
Intercontinental Championship match that they had then, Bret Hart versus Shawn Michaels from Syracuse, New York, in April 29th, 1992.
Okay.
They have a WWE Championship match. Bret Hart versus Shawn Michaels from the Survivor Series. Four-and-a-half-star match from 1992. It was just an awesome match. A very interesting, this will be very interesting for fans of Bret Hart. I've talked about this once before. Bret Hart versus Shawn Michaels from Utica, New York, from December 1st, 1993, a year later. It's a steel cage match and almost a spot-by-spot it actually was taped first, but almost spot-for-spot, what he did with Owen Hart. And almost like a, but I mean, it's like 8 months beforehand, but it almost turned out to be a trial run.
And more importantly, I bet Johnny Polo is doing commentary for that.
Hopefully. So now moving on to disc three, the Iron Man match, WrestleMania 12.
Never heard of it.
Bret Hart, the WWE Hall of Fame induction ceremony. Bret Hart's induction from Chicago. This is interesting because if you recall that night, he said that he won't do it and won't be if Shawn Michaels is even in the building.
That's right.
But afterwards, that Shawn was in the building.
Yes.
So this is, you know, a few years before they put it up, they put it all aside.
But then later he found out that Shawn Michaels has left the building.
No, he didn't.
No.
Bret Hart returns to Raw, so 3.5 years later, and they squish it, and a great moment. Then the Hall of Fame induction ceremony for Shawn Michaels. So we'll have that. Hopefully we'll have all of that, including all of Triple H's roast of him, which was awesome.
Hopefully it's the full uncut for both.
Yeah, I hope so. Well, Bret Hart is a good 45 minutes talking.
Does it
but it's hilarious. It's really funny.
Oh, yeah.
And Shawn Michaels, of course, wasn't short either. So.
No.
Yeah. But if Bret Hart went that long at the time because he legitimately thought he was never going to do anything past this, with the WWE, you recall the next night at WrestleMania in Chicago.
Didn't go.
CM Punk, yeah, he refused to be there and at the time. So, Blu-ray exclusive moments, which is why we'll be buying it for the Blu-ray copy, I believe. This is important to note as well. Vince McMahon introduced Shawn Michaels and Bret Hart on Raw February 3rd, 1997.
February 3rd, 1997?
Yeah.
So that would have been... before Shawn lost his smile, just before, and they would have been planting the seeds for the rematch.
Yes.
Okay.
Which was supposed to come at Mania.
That's right. Yeah.
Bret Hart promo in the ring, May 12th, 1997. Hart Foundation promo in the ring, Raw, May 19th, 1997.
Okay.
Must own moments for people.
No, that's it.
No.
Oh.
WWE Championship match. Bret Hart versus Shawn Michaels Survivor Series, September 9th, 1997. I repeat, this match is a Blu-ray exclusive.
The screw job.
Yes.
Good.
Yeah. Also, in other special...
I may not buy the Blu-ray just because of that now.
other Blu-ray exclusive features, them talking about the first ever WWE ladder match together. SummerSlam 1992, winning the WWE Championship for the first time.
Right.
Bret's WCW regret.
is that a one disc all to itself?
It should be.
And
the cameras, it's going to show some highlights of the camera rolling between takes from their 4-hour interview.
Oh, nice. Okay.
Behind the scenes stuff. So. Maybe that balances out the screw job.
Also,
so.
the other Blu-ray exclusive that they have from his time in WCW is candid comments from El Dandy.
Yeah. Now, I don't... Oh, El Dandy. That's awesome. Anyways, let's go over one other thing from this. It's not listing whether or not there's any commentary of the two of them calling the match or talking about a match as a alternate track together.
Right, right.
That is the case, because the Steve Austin 4-disc DVD that has coming out, he and Ross sat down. They talked about his match with The Rock in 2001 at WrestleMania. His match with Shawn Michaels.
I would like him and Nash to do that.
What did I say?
You said him and Nash at first.
Oh, did I? No, him and Ross. Sorry. But yeah, why the fuck would I say Nash?
I don't know, but that'd be awesome.
That would be awesome. But anyways, yeah, so we got that. We got him talking with JR about his match against The Rock, against Shawn Michaels.
Yeah.
Not against Bret Hart, I don't believe.
I thought they did do the Mania Bret Hart match alternate, yeah.
Well, maybe they did. Maybe they didn't. I thought they didn't. But either way, they are doing that, we know, for the Steve Austin, and that's good, because it's four discs. It's not five, like, you know,
like Jeff Jarrett. Right, exactly.
Because he's not as important.
No.
No. But, yeah,
Steve
Austin,
I'll tell you this right now. Steve Austin could not be the leader of Mexican America.
Fuck no. Steve Austin would not let them cross the border. He lives in Texas.
It's true. Maybe he could take some shooting tips from Brock Lesnar.
That'd be awesome. Lesnar's in Canada shooting, isn't he?
Yes, he is.
You know what would be great? The greatest hunting show ever? Fuck dump. If we could get Shawn Michaels and Brock Lesnar doing a hunting show together.
Yes. Got him. Did you see the clip of Brock Lesnar hunting?
No, I didn't.
I mean, he used to be a wrestler, so I guess it's topical. And I don't want to spend a lot of time on this, but I peed myself laughing when Brock Lesnar is seriously looking into the camera and going, you know, shooting these prairie dogs with different types of bullets really gave me a perspective.
What?
I'm going, what?
Awesome.
Fuck. Awesome. Kids, you know, you need to figure out which size bullet does the best damage to a gopher.
Yeah. And some of these bullets are probably as big as the gopher.
Yes, probably.
Anyway, so hopefully we'll hear word on whether or not they did some... I want commentary of the Iron Man match, the ladder match, the screwjob match, and the Survivor Series, the first Survivor Series match, personally, maybe one of the Rockers matches. I'm hoping for a lot of that.
Yeah, maybe I could see a Rockers match I'd like to see. I'd like to see the alternate commentary on I don't know if I'd like the alternate commentary on the Iron Man match, just because, I mean, I don't know if they need to talk for an hour.
Well, I would like it, but, yeah. Then again, I enjoyed that match more than you do.
Yeah, so. You did. But I don't know as well about the screw job, just because, again, I'm really over that.
Yeah. I just think it'd be interesting, but, well, we'll see.
I mean, how many... I guess if Sean was to comment on it again, maybe, but, I mean, I'm pretty fucking sure I know how Bret Hart feels about the screw job.
Really?
Yeah, it could be. I'm going out on a limb here, but... I may know.
Yeah.
So.
All right, let's give you the next subject here.
Okay.
We have left, and we went on that for a while, but it's going to be cool. October 25th, folks.
Nice. WWE, also nice here, has filed for 3 trademarks.
Okay.
They are looking to trademark Future Endeavor, Future Endeavored, and Mr. Future Endeavor.
Get the fuck out of here.
I am absolutely serious. I assume it's for John Laurinaitis. But that is...
I assume it would be for somebody he fired and bring him back.
I don't know. I think you'd just call him Mr. Future Endeavor John Laurinaitis.
Maybe, but I mean, they wanted to repackage Chris Master shortly before letting him go.
That's true. But they did, yeah, for some reason they didn't. Stephanie McMahon didn't like his package.
Yeah. Well, she got to know it pretty intimately, like everyone else is.
Apparently. Not Kelly. Stephanie.
Oh, I'm a mistake. Kelly's into hockey players now.
That's true.
Yeah.
The ones that can't make the NHL.
Yeah, exactly. Ones that are career is actually over.
Yeah.
But anyways, let's go on. Do you have another subject?
Well, you didn't mention, what are you thinking about those trademarks?
Well, I think we said, I mean, I assume it's for somebody fired. I just think it's funny. I'm actually surprised they don't have Future Endeavor already trademarked.
That's true. Okay, well, let's, I keep resisting the urge to talk about TNA, so I won't.
Wrestling.
Yeah.
Let's say something, because we can talk about them and how much they're shit.
Okay. Can I talk about Al Ovedina?
Okay.
Do you know who Al Ovedina is?
Nope.
He is someone, he is the executive that worked in TNA that is actually responsible for them getting that direct insurance national sponsorship.
Oh, yeah?
He got their sponsorship with Direct Insurance, I guess, through his connections in marketing and networking and whatnot, that he was able to get them. And apparently it is a really good deal.
Yeah,
that
that's
he got them. They fired him.
Yeah. Well, what else has he done for them?
Yeah, what did he do yesterday? Oh, fucking idiots.
Speaking of fucking idiots, let's start this. We got tapings this Thursday.
Right.
Huntsville.
If a taping falls in the forest.
They're having to paper it heavily.
Oh, I'm sure they're going to have to pay people.
Their first taping, Huntsville, Alabama, this Thursday, and they're tapering the shit out of it. Now, I don't know what the advances are for SmackDown here on Thursday or on Tuesday, but, I mean, they've had to start tapering this last week, like, already. They're giving away, if you buy an action figure at Toys R Us, you get a couple free tickets and shit like that. Like, they're just doing everything they can to fill it up.
Yeah, well, that's the thing, right? And I mean, no, I know there are still tickets on sale for SmackDown because I heard a radio commercial yesterday, actually.
Yeah, I'm sure there is. Yeah, I don't know what the events are. Maybe that. What do we pay?
Not much.
No?
We're like fourth row, though. So, and we paid like, I don't remember what it was, $50?
You're wearing your own shirt, right?
I was going to. I don't know. I haven't washed it yet.
Oh, well, how's that different for you?
Oh, that's true. Yeah, I'm wearing my Owen shirt. But
are we going to bring a sign?
No.
Are we going to bring a sign that says We Talk Wrestling?
No. Because it's We Talk Wrestling with Addy and Mo, not We Talk Wrestling with Addy and Mark.
Well, speaking of a Mark, let's talk about this. And we were talking about Bret Hart. He in that same interview, he was asked about the top 50 list, and he said he was placed behind Shawn Michaels, The Undertaker, and Steve Austin at number 4, and he said, every single time I ever faced Steve Austin, I beat him, so you tell me how to figure that out.
Yes.
And then he said, it's a work, folks.
Was he with Justin Roberts when he did this interview?
Jesus Christ. And then he said, you know what, if I did a top 50 list, it'd probably be legitimate. And I think that's true, whereas this is some magazine guy. That magazine guy can kiss my ass. He's upset with being listed 15,000 as a performance. He's number 4. That's pretty fucking good, Brett.
It's still real. Don't
worry that you're not number 1. Now we know why Oliver knows.
Oliver does know. Well, how about Mike Chioda? We'll go from Mark to Mike. Not just your wrestlers that are getting popped here.
No.
Mike Chioda suspended for 30 days.
Yeah, what's interesting is apparently it hasn't come out what he's suspended for, but some of the other referees are nervous. because of this suspension, which means it's something that they're probably doing as well.
Nice.
That's what's interesting about it to me. I mean, but I didn't even know referees were, you know, tested, so... Yeah.
Well, that's the thing is, yeah. I mean, it kind of makes sense, I guess. But no, it does. I didn't know that they were tested at all. So that's interesting.
He was childhood friends with Joey Morella, Gorilla's son, which is he got his position in the company originally. He's been there a lot.
He has been there quite a while. That's true. Yeah. We'll see what Jimmy Corderas has to say about that.
Yeah.
But
all right. Hey, what else? You got something else there? Or you want me to keep going? Because I got a billion.
We can talk about SmackDown going live.
Okay.
Unfortunately, not the one we're going to see, but a week from this Tuesday, the 30th, I guess that would make it. SmackDown going live. Not a super show. Just a show. I guess it's the Friday before Labor Day weekend is one of the reasons.
And they will be playing it on that Friday as well.
Yeah, they'll replay it for those people that don't know about it. On the Friday, but yeah, no, it's going. We're gonna get a live SmackDown on Tuesday. What do you think about that?
I'm wondering if it's because of Labor Day or are they testing the waters for the future.
I think it has a lot to do with the Ultimate Fighter.
Yeah. Okay. Well, why don't you break that down there for folks who may not be familiar?
Well, the UFC just recently signed. A deal that, I guess technically it starts 2012, but it's actually going to be November when they have their first Fox special. UFC signing a deal with Fox to have you know, some live specials on the Fox network. The Ultimate Fighter going to be moving to FX, which apparently is slated to come to Canada, which we don't currently get, but it's slated to come to Canada in October.
Yeah.
And so, but either way, we've got the Rogers Sportsnet that that would air the Ultimate Fighter. But it's going to be a different setup to what it is now, where they tape the whole thing and then they edit it all together and air it. It's going to be that they're going to be taping some footage, you know, over like a couple day period, like say on that Monday, Tuesday.
Yeah.
And then they're going to put that all together, air it on Friday, and then the fight is actually going to be live.
Yeah, that's very different.
And
it's very different.
Yeah. And
it's like a very highly expensive prospect compared to what they're currently doing. On the other hand, they're going to be earning significantly more money for this deal.
Well, that's
$90 to $100 million per year. You know, not where the major league sports are getting, but still a significant improvement.
That's right. Well, and I don't know when that Ultimate Fighter is set to start. That's the date that I didn't see. Maybe it is in 2012. So this would be a good time to sort of test those waters about going live and switching it to Tuesday. That way you could do it so far enough in advance that it doesn't look like you're running from UFC.
Yeah.
When, in fact, you're running from UFC.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I mean, but again, they've again come out and said different audiences.
Well,
that was the first thing they said, right?
Well, yeah, say that, sure. But
they can say that, but their own research would show that it isn't.
Well, that's just it, right? So, I mean, yeah, I mean, but of course they're going to say that, and so I don't really put any stock into that. I just think, you know, again, you go into the action speaking louder than the words. You know, I think it'll be interesting to see if this is just sort of a, you know, they've done this before, you know, a couple times, go do the Tuesday live just because they were preempted or it was Christmas or what have you. But now I just think it'd be interesting to see if they do it, you know, every week. And I mean, I think it'd be better for them being on a Tuesday than a Friday, for sure.
Yeah.
And I mean, I don't know how much live versus taped really really matters, but
it matters in cost. I mean, we know that.
It which?
It matters in the cost. We know that. It's significant. I've never been able to understand it, but it's simply it's quite a bit more expensive to have a live show than a tape show.
Well, I think that has more to do with how many people are involved and the fact that you're taking up the network satellite time, so that's got to be paid for as well. Whereas when you're beaming it and taping it or putting it, say, live to tape, as it were, you can go back and edit. There's less people involved, I think. There's less control. You know, they don't have to, you know, have their finger on the dump button, sort of thing, right? I mean, I don't know, you know, but
I know I have a couple friends who actually work in the industry. I should actually just ask them that. And you're probably right, though. If that makes sense.
Yeah.
I have trouble watching SmackDown on Friday. It would be easier for me to watch it on Tuesday for sure.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Same with me. So
I don't know if WWE, I mean, they want to get their other shows back on television. It seems to me, I mean, we're talking about, I mean, like you said, we've already talked a little bit about UFC here. UFC has been suffering to a large degree, I believe, from overexposure. Too many events and shows, and it doesn't look like they're going to be fixing that anytime soon. There's no off-season for them like there is other sports. So, I mean, if you have the amount of events that they have, I think it's damaging. Now, is the WWE already suffering from overexposure, and is it going to get worse?
No, WWE is just not good. Really, I mean, you could have one show, two show, eight shows. It's just... It wrestling's not hot. It's not good. So there's no. I mean, that doesn't really matter to me. I mean, that was a situation where in the late '90s when you had your you had Heat and you had Raw and you had SmackDown and you had your jacked and metal type shows. I mean, Heat when it was in that just like. From live from whatever it was at WWF New York, where they do interviews and have you know B show matches, you know, would still get over it too.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
So just because it was hot. So I mean, I don't know that really matters. I think if superstars say came back onto TV, it would probably get, you know, that same 0.9. Whereas if wrestling was hot, that same show might get a 2.1.
Yeah. Okay. I was just checking. I mean, I think you put an extra hour on Mondays and it goes 3 hours. You put those two TV shows back on. I think there is something to be said for being out there too much, but maybe you might be right.
Well, there is something to be said for being out there too much, but, you know, it doesn't really...
Well, in the late 90s, I couldn't watch enough wrestling. I mean, I'd watch SmackDown, I'd watch Thunder, I'd watch Nitro, I'd watch ECW. I couldn't get enough because the products were generally good.
I didn't watch Thunder, but yeah, I know what you mean.
I said generally.
But yeah, that's the thing too. I mean, especially being up here in Canada, we got Raw Monday, we got Nitro Tuesday, Thunder was Wednesday, SmackDown was Thursday, Friday was ECW, you know. Then there was nothing on Saturday, and then you had pay-per-view and Heat on Sunday.
And yeah.
I mean, I guess you could watch Saturday Night on Saturday, WCW Saturday Night, if you wanted to. So
yeah, exactly.
I mean, you had something.
And I couldn't get enough because it was generally good, like I say. And even if it wasn't good, those shows like Thunder, I was hoping would turn around, right?
And I mean, Jacked and Metal were classic.
was it Jacked or Metal? I think it was Metal where they first started to push the PG boundary, wasn't it?
Was it? No, it was. Didn't
that was, that was where, isn't that where Terry Runnels started to, you know, flash
pull and. Shotgun Saturday Night.
Shotgun Saturday Night, my mistake, right, yeah.
But that was, yeah. And Terry Funk called Steve Austin a fucker or something. An asshole, and yeah, he would just go, that was great.
Something like that, yeah. That's where they started to push the boundary. So.
Yeah.
Okay, let's move on to another subject. More Impact Wrestling being full of assholes, because you talked about Jimmy Yang not being paid in 6 weeks.
Yeah.
But 7 week mark, and he tweeted, 7 weeks and still no check. Somebody called me and said I was being unprofessional. Not paying somebody for a job is unprofessional.
Yes, there you are. You're being unprofessional. I'm like, well, to be professional as opposed to amateur, don't you get paid to be a professional?
Yeah.
So, I mean...
You can't accuse somebody... You know what? If Spike TV didn't pay them, they would probably send out a press release saying we're having difficulty. Spike TV hasn't paid them. But it's funny how you're being unprofessional. You're asking for your money. And he didn't do it after even a month. He waited 6 fucking weeks.
Well, they said the actual email that Jimmy Wang Yang was sent was, you are being unprofessional, but don't worry, I still love you.
Yeah, no shit. So they did hire some new guys, including Mark Haskins. So.
What's a Mark Haskins?
Exactly.
They hired everybody but fucking Jack Evans.
They hired everybody. Well, they hired everybody nobody knew of.
Yeah.
And don't get me wrong, that's not a bad thing. You now have 7 people apparently in the X Division, including like 5 new guys nobody's heard of.
Yeah.
And that's okay, but now you need to do a proper introduction to them. You can't just have them in the gauntlet match and then not give them proper character development.
Well, apparently they're going to have a feud with Kid Cash and that Sorensen guy.
Yeah, apparently a Sorensen guy. Yeah, and this gauntlet match, by how you were eliminated, set your ranking in the division. So Alex Shelley, for instance, was eliminated first. So he's the number 7 ranked guy in the X Division. Another thing they did, Impact Wrestling has done that's significant with that X Division, is officially announced a 225-pound weight limit.
Oh, did they?
Yes, they did.
Huh.
Yes, they did. Your thoughts on that?
Wow. That's interesting. I just, you know, I mean, so it's a fucking cruiserweight title now.
Yeah, exactly. It is. No longer no limits. And then right after they did that, Abyss challenged Kendrick on the road for the title.
Well, why wouldn't you, though?
But they have officially announced that. I think that's a dumb idea because, personally, because the idea of it not being about limits makes it bigger, makes the concept bigger, a bigger concept. But then again, I fucked it up anyway. So
I was going to say, I actually don't care because I don't, yeah, I mean, it's TNA, right? So, I mean, they'll... Like you said, they'll do a 225-pound limit, and then Abyss will win the fucking title. So who cares, really? Yeah. I mean, it's interesting that they've gone that route now to really kind of define it as a cruiserweight title. But you know, outside of that. And rankings, I mean, wow, good for them. Actually, you know what they're going to be doing now, too, is they're going to do a Bound for Destination X series.
Yeah, that'd be good. No, they should let the fans vote on the rankings now.
They totally should.
And then they'll punish Howard Shelley when he wins.
No, I'm going to vote for Desmond Wolf.
That's true. Well, speaking of Desmond Wolf, he showed up. He showed up. Talk about it.
Desmond Wolf showed up. What? Oh, on ROH. He's a commentator now. Nigel McGuinness for the ROH on Sinclair Network show. Which,
yeah,
does it have a name?
He's with Kevin Kelly, Nigel McGuinness. He got a huge pop. He should be excellent at that. He has been announced as never wrestling again due to an undisclosed medical condition. Maybe never know that. But that's still good for him. I'm glad he's getting paid. I'm glad he's on TV.
That is good for him. I just wanted to go quickly back, because before we did the Nigel McGuinness deal, 7,500 buys for Hardcore Justice.
Yeah, so less than Destination X.
Yeah. No, just throwing that out there.
Well, you know, again, nobody... They're idiots.
Well, yes. Clearly.
You know? Impact this last Thursday, actually, one thing that they did do that I liked was they actually had the main event being Mexico America versus Dear Money for the title. So that's a tag team title match, main event the show.
It did, yeah. They had the tag team title match to main event the show, which kind of leads me to my next point, which will do two things: give us A, great discussion, and B, take us away from TNA. But
really?
That
for TNA.
Hmm?
I have more Impact Wrestling to talk.
I don't care.
I got one you will care about, but go ahead.
Triple H. One of the things that he's mandating or that he's pushing is an emphasis to return to the tag team division.
Yeah, that's awesome. He's never really been a tag team performer himself, but the last time the tag team titles had any level of heat to them,
yeah,
it was when DX had them, when he had them, and they were feuding against Legacy and such. So,
and yeah, Jericho and all that, yeah.
I mean, if they kind of made the mistake, because at the time the Hardys were also teaming together, and if they had just put DX versus the Hardys, I don't care if it's face versus face, that could have been a lot of buys. They blew that.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, that's awesome. And, again, there's a lot of guys who can be – someday we need to go through and go, who are all the guys who haven't been used forever? Who would you team them with, and what would you do with them?
Yeah.
Because a lot of guys in the company, you can do that.
Definitely. But, no, I just think that that's good. That's a good sign that at least there's a recognition there that that it needs to return.
That said, and then the last Monday, Heaven Born and Kofi Kingston, who are probably going to give the titles, win a non-title match against what do you call them, the Nexus, the current Nexus, or whatever you call it.
Matunga Cuddy.
Yeah.
The Perfect Hudson.
The Perfect Hudson. And I've said this, you know what they should call Michael McGillicuddy? Is drop that, call him Joe Hennigan, and call him Perfect Son.
Yeah.
Perfect Son. I like that. But anyways, they buried the shit out of their current tag team.
Totally.
On commentary. They, you know, these guys are bland, and they're this and that, and they got nothing going for them. And so maybe until I see Triple H's tag team push actually happen, I won't believe it.
No, that's very true. So I understand.
You understand. I'm going to go back to the Hardys, though.
Okay.
Because Matt Hardy.
I can drink some tornadoes.
Crashes his car while drunk into a tree, goes to jail. Dixie Carter makes the call to get him out of jail, and then they fire him. And good. this is right after he was saying that he's back in shape, that he's healthy again. It's time for him to get back in the ring. He was talking about how excited he was for that, and now of course he's gone. So, what an idiot!
Yes, very, very. I mean, he's just it was.
This is the statement that TNA released.
Oh,
TNA
good.
Today released Impact Wrestling star Matt Hardy from his roster. Hardy was already under suspension from the company. That's it. So they don't just mention that he's fired. They say, by the way, he was already suspended. So that's a kick in the ass on the way out. But again, drunk driving, especially after all the shit they've been through, Jesus Christ, guys. Rehab.
Yes. Well, that's just the thing,
it's
right?
It's time. I mean,
oh, it's time? Well, it was time a long time ago. And, the thing is, where Matt Hardy, hopefully this is the slap in the face, because there really is nowhere else for him to go.
Well, that's the thing,
he can't go to ROH.
Well, he did once.
Yeah, but they're not going to take him.
No, they're not going to take him.
Yeah.
There is no place for him to go. WWE's not going to take. Nobody's going to take this guy.
WWE will take him in their employee-sponsored rehab program.
Do it.
And that's it.
That's it. And maybe if he does that and he straightens up, he can go back. But I think he's too. From everything I've seen, he has too big of an ego. He's too arrogant. Too pleased with himself to ever go to rehab, get himself straightened up, or match his talent. This might have been quietly the last we're ever going to see of this fellow on a national stage.
Again, they never say never, but yeah.
Never say never, but it might have.
But it's looking that way.
Yeah. Time cost some more Impact Wrestling, or you want to move on to something else? You got something else there?
That is the stupidest question you have ever asked me.
Well, do you have something else? Wasn't the stupid part, I guess.
Well, I'd like to talk about Booker T, and that's not what I like about the Young Bucks.
Yeah, apparently they wouldn't shake his hand as such backstage, and they also wouldn't shake Goldust's hand. And Goldust said you don't have to like me, but respect my experience and my position within the industry.
Well,
and Booker T is kind of the same thing. How stupid to have a tryout, not shake hands, and not be, you know.
Well, I will say Nick Jackson did say, though, in terms of Goldust, he knew where that hand had been.
Mm. Where?
Hmm. Down where?
Down there?
Down there.
Yeah, the Young Bucks. Again, ROH bound? Because they're too stupid?
Wow, it's just... That is stupid. I mean, that'll cost them. I mean...
Gregor Helms said it on a blog or something like that, or a tweet, something about always shake the hand when you're a young guy getting in there. I mean, Gregor Helms is kind of a tool himself. Is telling these guys, then, I mean, that's all you need to know.
Well, yeah, that's very telling.
Yeah, exactly.
One off topic that I wanted to kind of get to that's a little bit related in terms of just sort of get a quick comment on what you think about that, if WWE will follow suit, is that you know who Mike Jacobs is?
No.
Mike Jacobs is a player, or was a player, for the Colorado Rockies in baseball.
Mm-hmm.
And he was released for testing positive for HGH.
Really?
Yes.
That means they found a way to test positive. They found a way to test for it now.
So it's part of apparently the Major League Baseball drug policy is human growth hormone, and that this fellow's been axed for it. So it's just an interesting little tidbit that. Apparently, at least the technology may not be perfect, but it is out there. So,
that's awesome because, yeah, I mean, I have long been under the understanding that there was no way to test for it financially without in an easy way. So, I mean, maybe they've come around to that. I mean, there's always that next thing. The thing about developing these designer drugs for bodybuilding and enhancement, they're always ahead of the curve. But that doesn't mean the people using are going to be ahead of the curve. The development may be. So that's great. I hope, because for the sake of the performers, I hope everybody can be clean.
Yeah, oh yeah. And I mean, and it's, I mean, and when you talk about that too, I mean, I don't know about, you know, with Mike Jacobs, you know, I never heard of him, so, you know, he's not making billions of dollars, I'm sure, so I'm sure he wasn't someone that was getting the top of the line stuff.
No, no. That's right. That's right. He was not Barry Bonds.
He was not Barry Bonds. Barry Windham?
No, he's not. The difference is Barry Bonds, though, didn't know what he was injecting. He didn't know.
That's true. That's true.
Another quick hit here over here. Lance Storm has a book out. It's called Storm Warning. It's available on Amazon, so I just want to plug that. It's a collection of his articles from his website, starting in 1999, leading through WCW and such. And
it goes up to the last Nitro.
Yeah, it leads up to the last Nitro, and it'll be tremendous. He's not just plugging him because he's a Calgary guy, though there's that too. But I just want to let everybody know, Storm Warnings, Storm. He's an excellent writer, and he does on his website something called Bookmark, because he enjoys reading, he enjoys crime novels and those type of things, and he's I think it'll be a great read, so recommend it.
Are they making it into a movie?
No, so I will read it to you.
Okay, perfect.
Yeah, that will solve that problem for you.
Definitely. Well, I can't wait.
Yeah. There is
a guy.
There's a funny thing that happened.
Oh, really?
Okay, no. Let's talk about another quick hit. So fucking many. Performers are being told if they're being interviewed by a reporter now, whenever they say something like rustling or rustlers, they have to correct them and tell them entertainers and sports entertainment. Your thoughts on that? Not all of them are doing it, but they've been told they have to.
Yeah, well, that's the thing, right? So, I mean, good. I mean, it's one of those things. I mean, how many times have these guys been told to do stuff and they just don't do it? I don't know that it really matters. It's interesting to me that that's come out, though, when you talk about sort of the synergy of everything, in that, you know, like, the word wrestler has got its way back onto television.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it seems kind of, if they'd done this a year ago, you know, I would think, okay, at least that fits. You know, it's consistent. But now, when, I mean, you're going to say, you can't call us wrestlers. And they're going to go, well, I just watched a show on Monday, and I heard the word wrestler like 8 times.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
That's the part.
From the announcer. The announcers don't use it.
No, not the announcer. But, I mean, it's...
From the announcer.
Still, it's one of those things that, as I said, I mean, that just needs to get kind of cleaned up in the consistency to me. And I mean, I think everybody realizes that it's you know, the wrestlers at least realize that it's stupid. So, you know, I could see them, I mean, if it was me, if I was doing it, I would not correct the reporter when the question is asked. But I would respond in the way, you know, well, you know, it's part of what we are as entertainers. We go through a variety of different things, you know, or, you know, spin it that way.
Yeah.
So that I never say wrestler in the interview, but I don't stop the reporter from...
And don't look such a total jackass. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly, right? So...
I think that's basically what they've been doing up until now, but this is just a further push on it.
Yeah, and I don't know that that'll change.
Speaking of people who refer to themselves as wrestlers, Steve Austin
was
on a tap of the show, and he teased that if he was to have a match, it would be with Punk at WrestleMania. To quote, it would be a great matchup. I'm not saying it's going to happen. I'm not saying it's not going to happen. It's something to think about.
Okay.
You were drinking, weren't you? I can tell.
Yes.
I wasn't looking at you, but what are you drinking? Is it water, beer?
Well, I'm just drinking water, yeah.
Okay, I didn't see you. Got it hidden over there.
Uh-huh.
I assumed it was vodka.
Oh, it could be.
Could be. But Steve Austin.
In Russia, we call that water. yes. Steve Austin. I don't like that.
You don't like that?
I don't like that match.
Well, Steve Austin?
I just... It doesn't do anything for Punk.
Are you kidding?
Yeah. What does it do for Punk?
Punk does the same for Punk as what Rock does for Cena, at least.
Well, yeah, but when it's Rock and Cena, we know who the babyface is there. And it ain't Cena.
It doesn't. Okay, that's true. Okay, I'll give you that. But
you got a babyface on the rise, and you're going to saddle him with the greatest babyface of all time, or one of?
Yeah. You know what? I think it's more important to get heat. I mean, it's more important to have a match that people will pay to see and to have his name out there in pop culture and spoken about and just seen as that level of a star. I think that's more important. I don't think you could turn him again afterwards. Cena, you can't turn because people have already hated him. Punk, you can turn easily enough.
Yeah.
I think it's endorsed by Austin. But
let me flash back here for you then. Let's say Steve Austin.
Face the matches work.
Steve Austin's on the rise in 1996, and you bring in, Randy Savage to come in and fight with Steve Austin. Now, a little bit different, but, I mean, I can't even think of a good example of someone for Steve Austin to come in, because Steve Austin and Punk's their gimmicks are very similar in terms of anti-establishment. Like, to me, CM Punk and Steve Austin should be tag team partners, because they seem like two guys that get along.
Okay, well, what about the idea that Punk is seen that highly of, though, by Austin?
Well, I mean, that's tremendous, and of course, why not? I mean, yeah, sure, I can see that. I mean, because Steve Austin has had a good eye for talent, as far as, you know, what his tweets and just any comments that I've heard him make, but. Again, it's just, to me, that takes him, because what's he going to have to do? He's going to run down Steve Austin, because he's going to say, you know, you're not going to have this I love you match between Steve Austin and CM Punk. So what do you hope to accomplish, I guess?
Like I said, I've seen face versus face. It's like,
but never.
Goldberg was an extremely hot baby face. And then you had the people champ DDT versus him, and it still and that he was able to feel a little bit of Goldberg's heat, but it didn't hurt Goldberg.
I'll stop you right there because Goldberg was the world heavyweight champion. Arguably, Goldberg there, not even arguably there, Goldberg at his peak. And DDP was a year before Goldberg. In terms of his rise, but you had two established baby faces there.
Yeah.
CM Punk is not yet an established baby face.
Well, maybe he will be by.
Oh yeah, because he's fucking fighting Nash.
Good point.
I mean, no, in terms of.
Well, what if he fights? What if he fights Triple H and he goes after Triple H to Austin? You know, what if he goes over on Triple H, a heel Triple H, and then. I don't know. I think, and that's another thing, I think Punk can flip from heel to face easily, where Cena just can't, because, I mean...
Yeah, but but what was the last great, huge drawing baby face that flipped back and forth?
Yeah, I know what you mean.
I mean, The Rock did when, face briefly, and then stayed heel before then turning face ultimately, and then he did his little heel run later. But
I think the closest would maybe be Foley was flipping back and forth often. Undertaker was flipping back and forth often at one era.
But Undertaker and Mick Foley were not flipping back and forth often when they were getting established. Undertaker was flipping back and forth when he had, like, what it was like the fucking decade of destruction.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So, it's a situation where, like I said, the match itself and the two performers there, I don't have a problem with that concept or that theory. I mean, last year, when it was with the SES there, and he made fun of Austin or whatever, and it looked like, you know, trying to, I think it was on, maybe on Old School Raw or something that way when he was... called out Austin and Punk was a heel. And I mean, Punk will go heel again down the road, but he shouldn't for a long time, and Austin will be too old by then. What?
So you'd rather see, like, Miz versus Austin.
Yeah. I would.
Well, I think you've talked about Punk versus Foley before. I mean, Foley isn't the same thing. Foley's coming back as a major babyface.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it's just... Again, but you could turn Foley heel.
Not so easily.
You can't turn Austin heel. Yeah, Foley, though... There is an element of Foley that, like, just fucking go away. And that's where I am with Mick Foley, is you know what? Is, yeah, okay, I'll be back on the show for a little while, it'll be hunky-dory, nice to see him, but after about 2 months, and I see him a lot, I'll be sick of Foley. Foley is, we talk about overexposure, Foley is overexposed. Austin is not.
Foley is great in one feud, and then he has to go away, and come back a couple years later or whatever. So.
Well, yeah.
And
so if they can play that out, and keep him along, keep him around, and, you know, and make him, you know, overexposed and get that sentiment, you know, that a lot of people, I think, already have, then he could be a heel and he could fight Punk as a heel. Punk's got to be a babyface. And that's,
a heel if he was still in TNA. He can't be a heel when he comes back to the WWE.
Not immediately, but within 3 weeks, sure.
No.
Hmm?
No.
Then I don't do that match. Punk is a babyface, and Punk fights a heel.
Okay.
That's it.
Okay, let's go on to another topic. Linda is going to run. It's pretty much guaranteed. 99.9% that she is running again for the Senate. Your thoughts on that?
Well, she's already the Senator of Connecticut, I thought.
Oh, yeah. Go back and listen to our interview we had with her.
Yeah, it was back in, like, March, I think. But
fucking awesome.
No, you know, that's just, it's more money that's going to be spent. It'll be interesting to see how the product, I don't want to say changes, but sort of adapts to this.
Yeah, that was my thought, too, because, I mean, again, on this last Monday, Cena said, you know, your destiny is me kicking your ass. Pushing that PG boundary, they're not. Like I say, they're not trying to be pleased for
now. When is this campaign? When is the election? Next year, 2012? Is that the election?
2012, yeah.
So they got to be, you know, that's like a year away, basically. They do it in November in the U.S., you know? So
November 8th.
Yeah, so we're like, you know, 14 months away, essentially.
Yeah.
So I would think you're going to have to be declaring this, and I don't know anything or a lot about the U.S. politics, but I would think you'd be declaring this pretty damn soon.
Yeah, yeah.
So, but one of the things that I had read was that
Joe Lieberman's vacating the seat, and that's the one she's going to be running for.
Who?
Joe Lieberman.
Ah, yes. Wasn't he one of the people in the Parent Television Council?
I think he may have been.
I believe he was, yeah. So
my knowledge of him is he's Democrat who turned Republican.
Yeah, okay. And I think...
He was originally trying to I think against, when Kerry was running against Bush, he was at that time a Democrat.
Well, I think that the person that should actually run then for Joe Lieberman's seat, the former Parent Television Council person, is Stevie Richards.
That would be excellent.
Yes.
Because the other guy who's ahead of the, what was the name of the guy running the parents council of the PTC?
Oh, Blumenthal? Is that? No, that was the guy that ran against Linda. I don't remember his name.
Either way, apparently he's got like some position where he's making like $500,000 a year. So.
Oh, good. Good.
He's not going back against anybody. Okay. Also, I think one of the things that's interesting is this country's going to open up her campaign for a contribution instead of running completely on her own money.
Yeah, good. And I think that, and I also had heard that they're already sort of starting the, whereas before they kind of, they didn't really do the WWE distancing, easy for me to say, whereas now they've already kind of begun that. What?
Yeah, I said you sounded like me there.
Oh, yeah. No, they've already begun distancing herself from WWE.
Yeah.
So I don't know that you'd ever be able to get away from it, but if you can, you know, because it's going to be what the opponents key in on, right?
Well, it's not really that, but I mean, if you want to say what are your credentials, I ran this Fortune 500 company or whatever, right? Like that is the credentials, so you can't completely dismiss it either.
No. So there's got to be some consciousness of WWE, the creative part of the company, you know, when it comes to that. I don't know, is you know, John Cena saying ass, you know, going to cost Linda an election? No.
No.
You know, if they're not, I mean, what all you've got to really be doing
they
is...
They were super careful last time.
They were too careful last time.
Yeah.
And when they're talking about, you just have to stay away from talking a bit about it being PG.
Yeah.
That's really all you have to do. Is, you know, they've got the anti-bullying shit that they're doing, right? I mean, so they're putting that, some of that stuff out there. You know, you can talk about the movie that they made, right? You know, and so you can put that stuff out there as well to be more than just WWE, the wrestling company that, you know, promoted HLA and Katie Vick.
Okay, let's talk then about something that may hurt her campaign. Heath Slater.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I honestly, I don't know the whole story. It happened in Atlanta, did it? And it was Heath Slater was accused of choking a woman, forcing him to the bed, to his bedroom to bone her. Isn't that what happened?
Basically, I'll go through it then. Heath Slater, there's a woman named Corrine Oliver, security guard with Allied Barton Security Services.
Oliver knows.
She had to struggle to fight off Slater. He grabbed her by the neck and tried to force her into his hotel room. The police came. It was taking place between 4 and 5 a.m. at the Hyatt Regency Hotel in Atlanta. Oliver's attorney, Jackie Patterson, told the Atlanta Journal-Constitution that she was working at the hotel trying to keep fans out. She claimed Slater asked her to go to his room, and she declined. He started telling her she was pretty and hot and those type of things. The next thing you need to know, she was in a chokehold. Oh, this is funny, dude. And she was dragging her and bending her backwards, trying to get her on the elevator to his room. That last part was funny. I wish I wasn't laughing. But she had to violently struggle to get his arm from around her neck. Oliver told police that the struggle left her with back pain.
Oliver knows.
The police report lists the incident as a possible simple assault or battery incident. Oliver filed a complaint to her supervisor. Her company didn't do anything. She went to the police. The Allied Barton Security said the incident was reported immediately. They couldn't comment further. WWE attorney Jerry McDevitt has stated the alleged victim is making claims against Slater individually and it's being investigated. This has nothing to do with WWE.
That's right. Yep. Which is the smart way to do it. You distance yourself from it. And when you talk about it, you know, having impact on Linda's campaign, you know what? It just one of those, again, we're talking also about a situation here where they're going to do an investigation and, you know, the real crux of Linda's campaign is no matter what happens between the time she announces her candidacy, really we're talking about a year away. The last 2 months, last 8 weeks, right?
Yeah.
Are crunch time. So as long as you say, oh, then it's going to be crunch. That's how she lost it before, was in the last 2 months, right?
Yeah.
So, sure. I mean, it's a situation where this whole thing, I don't know that it's going to be an issue for Linda when you talk about that. And I mean, who knows? We'll wait and see what happens. Heath Slater hasn't been on TV since.
No, he really hasn't been.
Not at all. Or was he in the Battle Royal? I don't even know, but...
I can't recall of it.
But, you know, it's a situation there. So, and I mean, if he ends up getting released over it, well, then maybe there's smoke to the fire.
Yeah.
You know? Or
see, but it is a story that we'll to keep a track on going forward, that's all.
Well, it's something that when they said, one of two things are gonna happen, he's either going to be released or... he's going to be absolved of any wrongdoing. And, and we will bring that to you here on We Talk Wrestling when that happens.
What you're saying is he's either guilty or innocent.
It's a complicated issue, but, yes, those are two possibilities.
Mm, okay.
But,
okay.
I mean, that's just it. He's either released or you know, or he's not guilty. So, I mean, we'll wait and see. I mean, these sorts of things happen, I don't want to say all the time, but, I mean, accusations are made, and who knows? I mean, remember the chick that said something about Sandman doing something, and it was on fucking tape, and nothing happened? I mean, it's... Yeah. So, I mean, this may shock you, but there are crazies in the world.
Yeah.
So, you know, who knows?
No, I'm not saying he did anything. I just, you know, like you say, just reporting the story. So,
well, we're only really getting one side of the story, too, which is why I'm able to somewhat make light of it, right?
So, there's three sides to every story, right? Yours, mine, and the truth.
That's right. So, well, mine and the truth are usually the same, but there is your side, too.
Well, but, so you and the truth are the same, are you?
Me and little Jimmy hang out.
Nice. Okay, how long are we here? Because I'm not nearly done talking wrestling. So much to talk about. I'm having fun talking it.
It's funny you say that, because I'm done listening to you.
So hopefully people are having fun listening.
We're an hour and 40 minutes in.
How long?
An hour 40.
Well, that's not a record yet, so let's keep going.
No. Greg the Hammer Valentine has not yet been warmed up for an hour.
No, that's right.
Can we get to the mailbag question that we've got, too? I've got a mailbag question.
You got a mailbag question, please. I was going to say ROA staking, so you know what? Let's go on to that.
Yeah, one of our frequent emailers.
Chris.
Yes, Matt in Concord, North Kakalaki.
Yeah.
And he said he denotes underneath, yes, with grapes this time.
Yeah.
He had a question that just sort of after watching SummerSlam, he noticed that many people in the crowd were cheering for the heels,
mm-hmm.
like Del Rio and Miz. And his question was, has there ever been a time when WWE fans went against what WWE wanted just for the spectacle of it?
Has there ever been did you watch the ECW One Night Stand pay-per-view?
Well, there's the ECW... Well, but...
How about that taping in that one ECW where the audience was chanting during the Batista versus Big Show?
Change the channel. That's what I was just about to say.
Of all time.
I was going to say, that is the one that popped out to me. You know, when you talk about the ECW, it's going against what WWE wanted. And I think when going into those ECW pay-per-views, you know, they knew. Like, you know, it's not that they knew what they wanted. It's just they knew. What I would go back to say, and we talked about there a time WWE fans went against what WWE wanted. I'll go back to WWF fans wanting what WWF wanted, and the first thing that pops into my mind is the Honky Tonk Man.
Yeah, absolutely.
Honky Tonk Man comes in from his stint as Honky Tonk Ferris in Stampede here as a heel, comes into WWF as the babyface Elvis impersonator.
Mm-hmm.
And the fans just shit on him.
Yeah.
And to the point where what they did is they had a 900 number call-in thing or a write-in deal where they had a poll. You know, do you like the Honky Tonk Man, yes or no? And then they had
one of the great interviews of all time at the end.
And Jesse Ventura's in the ring there with the results, and the Honky Tonk Man is like, all right, let's get the results and see how many people want the Honky Tonk Man. And, of course, and then Jesse Ventura goes, they don't like you, Honky.
Yeah.
And he's like, and he just gets the facial expression of, like, the pouty, you know, betrayed, you know, just sour face, right? I don't care what they say. And then
people in the past have talked to me going, that this was set up from the beginning. But it wasn't. They really did want him to be a babyface.
They didn't know, exactly.
Yeah. I think it's always been to some degree, some markets are always being more likely to do this than others. I think ECW crowd in the late 90s really changed the mentality of a crowd entertaining themselves and going against this, going to business for themselves, so to speak. But I recall seeing Randy Savage in 1985. In Toronto Maple Leaf Garden, fixing some jobber as a heel and getting a huge babyface reaction. Even though he was a heel, acted like a heel, was announced like a heel, was getting a huge babyface reaction that night. I don't know that it's anything new.
What is new is that we talked a little bit about it earlier when we were talking about the Bret Shawn DVD, is that these things were taped so far in advance and were so pre-produced that you know, if for say Hulk Hogan wasn't getting a reaction that you know that they wanted, you know, the Royal Rumble in with the one that Ric Flair won in 1992 is a perfect example. This happened a lot earlier too. Is that when Hogan pulled out Sid Justice, it was to a chorus of resounding boos.
But that was what they wanted that night. It's just they changed their mind.
But when you got watched the DVD or the VHS, or you watched it back when they replayed it, the angles leading up, of course, then you've got tremendous cheers. It's sweetened in, and that used to happen on the superstars and the wrestling challenge tapings and all those. They would tape so far in advance that even if someone was getting a different reaction, they would just clean it up and take care of that.
Yeah, and that's another thing. You talk about the After magazines back then. They would always talk about how adult audiences and hardcore and long-term wrestling fans didn't like Hulk Hogan.
Yeah.
And this blew my mind because I'm watching on TV and it seemed like everybody liked him.
Yeah,
but
exactly.
But they talked about it back then, you know, and it's really difficult for us to really judge now just how much Hogan was disliked or how much of a heel reaction he got on occasion, because it was a different time. And there was those differences going on. So.
Well, definitely. And I think when he talked about SummerSlam, I mean, and Miz is starting to get that babyface reaction, you know. But then when they talk about SummerSlam, I mean, Miz lives in Los Angeles right now.
Mm-hmm.
And so when they talk about SummerSlam, I mean, a little bit of that was in fact, the hometown. And Alberto Del Rio as well. I mean, no secret in South California there. There's quite a big Latino contingent population. So, I mean, that to me is, you know, the reason for Alberto Del Rio. And part of it as well was that they were seeing Money in the Bank cashed in.
Well, that's another thing to talk about in this occasion. Del Rio, I mean, there was a big babyface reaction when he won the belt. And then afterwards, after they went off the air, Roberto Rodriguez, is that the name? Am I getting it right?
Ricardo,
thank you. Sorry, I knew I was doing it wrong. Ricardo Rodriguez was going off the air, was announcing, and your new WWE champion, and doing it in that Ricardo, great announcer, Latino voice. And at first he was getting booed.
Yep.
And he did like 20 times, and apparently by the end, or like the 20th time, it was the second biggest Punk or reaction, a babyface reaction, behind Punk of the evening. Apparently,
yeah.
It's hugely over the baby faces that kept on doing it. We're talking about SummerSlam. SummerSlam is different. There's certain markets where I say which have a different mentality. Canada, certainly, that's bizarro land. But it's nothing new. Anytime, though, you're talking about a SummerSlam, a Royal Rumble, a WrestleMania, maybe even in the past, to some degree, a Survivor Series, you're talking about
do they still have that?
They have it this year. People will still travel for these events. These events, actually, people will go to Los Angeles to attend SummerSlam Live. Not at the same level as they do WrestleMania, but they still do, and they travel for Royal Rumble. So you're getting a different audience, and the different audience that inside the smart marks, as they like to refer to themselves, are more likely to do this as well.
That's very true. Now, this is sort of the second question there is, can the wrestling fans still choose who they want to be bad and good? Or is the choice already been made by the powers that be?
So the choice has already been made by the powers that be. There was a period where you could influence them, or they were listening to the audience. There was a period when they were losing the ratings and they were listening to the audience.
Yeah.
But they're not doing that anymore. They don't have to. Vince McMahon came up there himself and told you, I'll tell you what you like. And he meant it.
Well, do you think, though, that... I'm just trying to think of, I mean, well, obviously CM Punk turning babyface was, they had thought for Chicago, but I think they're, you know, surprised by the reaction. I think in terms of when you're talking about being bad or good, I think it's something that they will listen to a certain degree, if they like that, that they will listen to the crowd in terms of who's getting over, like a Zack Ryder, for instance. You know, it wasn't until they went to Long Island and there was the Ryder chance, that's when they decided to, you know, start to get him on TV a little bit. Listen, I mean, he's not the fucking champion, but he's not on Superstars. you know, I think they're looking at The Miz a little bit too now and sort of seeing the reaction that he's been getting. And it wouldn't surprise me that that would, you know, not right away, but eventually sort of transform him to maybe a babyface. But I don't know that, I think that if fans consistently rejected a babyface character, I think that they would turn him heel. Especially in a situation where if they do happen to go live on SmackDown too, right?
Okay, you're saying that they listen to what the crowd does or what they do and say and this and that, and who's getting over? Matt Hardy. Matt Hardy could get a massive reaction regardless of his push the longest time, and it didn't matter to them because they didn't see him as a star. I completely disagree.
Well, the thing is part of it is, I mean, being you've also got to be minding your P's and Q's. You talk about Matt Hardy. Matt Hardy was, when are we talking about Matt Hardy? 2005?
Anytime.
Well,
anytime. You can go back to 1999 with him.
But let's look at Christian. And Christian's getting a run of the belt out of necessity, and he's someone that's, you know, maintained at the, you know, at that top of the card level. But, you know, he's put his time in, and he got the belt. And, you know, and immediately lost it. But I think that...
extenuating circumstances regarding Chris.
They were, but I mean, I don't hold... Matt Hardy doesn't really hold... I mean, I look at that as that was 5-6 years ago with Matt Hardy. You know, I could say the same thing for someone that they missed the boat on in 1997, probably, too, right?
Yeah, I'll look at Christian getting the huge reaction for several months leading up into his... three-way match versus Cena and Jericho, and then coming out and getting beat down in Toronto by the Mexicools in order to send a point over to him. You're not supposed to be over. You're not that big a star.
Okay, so let's go back here. No, let's go back here then, and let's talk about that because the other thing that I want to talk about is this coming episode of Raw tomorrow. What do you, Mo, think that Evolution is going to do? On Raw. Like, what do you think the group Evolution is going to do on Raw tomorrow?
What the hell is your point?
My point is that it's not fucking 1990 or 2005. You're talking about Christian and Matt Hardy and all this.
Well, give me a recent example, then.
It's a different story. All I'm saying
it's a different story. It's never been a different story.
All I'm saying is that...
If Orton can come out and get a huge reaction several weeks in a row, it doesn't matter.
My point, though, is that if someone is constantly going to get rejected as a babyface, that they're not going to keep going with it.
Well, you mean they'll take him off TV or they'll turn him?
Well, there's both.
Because really, what about John Cena?
Yeah, but with John Cena gets booed, John Cena gets cheered. I mean, John Cena's a mix. And they do nothing now but recognize that and fucking talk about it.
Okay, Sheamus, until recently, was ready for the crowd to be turned for a long, long time. It wasn't until they needed a babyface that they did it.
Yes, exactly. But
they needed a babyface.
Yes, but then they needed a babyface, but that's what I'm fucking saying, Jackoff, is that they're doing, it's a combination.
It
is a combination. If they need a fucking babyface, they're going to look at the pro. Okay, who do we have that's getting that we can turn babyface? Well, I think the crowd's going to take to Sheamus because they've been sort of taking him as babyface. What? Okay, make that so.
Nah, that might
okay,
be true.
Okay, yeah, no, it's fine.
I'll give you that. Okay,
yeah.
I'll give. All right.
But that's all I'm saying is that do the fans have the power? I agree that the fans don't have the ultimate power to say I want this guy to be a good guy. Then boom, they go, oh, well, let's make him a good guy then. No,
they have to have... had any power to do anything, and they brought a sign sharing somebody or whatever, and they didn't want it on TV, they'll take it from them.
Yes.
I expect here Tuesday or tomorrow night in Canada, is it Edmonton that Raw taping is?
Is it?
I think
yeah,
so.
I think Raw is in Edmonton, you're right, yeah.
Either way... The Divas of Doom will get a massive babyface reaction. It's not going to matter.
No, but because they'll look at that as the same way that they're looking at Alberto Del Rio getting cheered at SummerSlam, that it's a hometown reaction. They're not going to turn the baby face. If they go to Des Moines, Iowa, and they go to Cleveland, and they go to fucking Kansas City, and the Divas of Doom start to get a baby face reaction, and they need baby face, and Kelly gets herpes or something and gets hurt and can't perform, then maybe they look at switching those over.
Wait a second. Kelly gets herpes?
I know. It's shocking.
Yeah, already has them.
Yes. But I'm just saying that if the need comes up, that's where they'll go. And that's all I'm saying is that they have the power to influence when necessity arises.
To give them to Stephanie.
Yes.
Anyways, no, I don't know, man. I look at Karma as another example. They weren't about to turn her baby face. She was getting a baby face reaction. I don't think...
You don't know that they weren't about to turn her baby face because that never played out.
They weren't.
Okay, they weren't, because you were there in the creative meeting.
No, they weren't. That's not the direction they were going.
Sure.
The point is, okay, look, you're right to some degree. I'll give you this. If there is something that is staring them right in the face and they think, hey, we can use that to make money, and it's convenient for us, it works within our guidelines of the character or what we can do,
We'll
do. But if it goes against what we want to do, then we won't do it. It depends on how open they are to, you're right, it does change. It does change frequently. Vince McMahon could be open to calling people rustlers for 3 weeks in a row and then say that nobody can ever use it again. Because we got somebody who can't make up his mind what he's going to wear that morning.
Well, I mean, no, that exactly. That happens. And that's... All I'm saying is that I'm not in, when they say do they have the powers of B, all I'm saying is it's a combination. That's my whole point, and I'm 100% right on that.
Well, you know what, I will tell you, if they don't want something to happen, doesn't matter what the crowd is going to do, they will not do it.
No, I know,
They will not.
No, it's... And I agree with you there.
Is made up to somebody. If their mind is made up that somebody is a mid carder, even if he gets a main event reaction, not going to matter. And the same idea that the crowd cannot totally turn the perceptions of the company around. It can work in conjunction with other factors. Christian's a great example.
That's what I just said.
And do it by himself.
That's what I just said. Without being
what
so.
What are you arguing?
Because you just keep putting your sourpuss face on and going, well, they won't do this. And all I'm saying is, no, they probably won't. But if they need someone and someone's getting a reaction, then they'll go with it. So when you talk about do the fans have the power to make changes, the fans have influences to make changes. They don't have the...
Kofi Kingston, another good example, more recently than Evolution. He's getting a big reaction. He's getting over. He's doing well. Fucks up one move of the ring. Randy Orton yells at him in the ring, is pissed off at him, his push goes down the hill. We see it all the time that Jack Swagger was doing really, really well as world champion. But they didn't really want him in that. He got it out of circumstance. He's back down to the mid-card or even lower and jobbing out pretty soon. He was doing really well in his short run of the world championship. But they don't see him at that level. And another thing that you have to keep in mind when we're talking about the crowd influencing them, they love nothing more than to give something to you, then take it away, shit on you to see if you'll react, to see if you're mentally strong enough to be a higher level guy, to take that pressure. That's something that they do as well. And that's another factor that influences all of it.
Sure. Well, but Matt was talking about the switching people heel baby face. So, I mean, in terms of you know, high level card, bottom level card. That I wasn't even going there because that wasn't the question.
Oh. Okay.
So, all right. Thanks. Well, we're just about to hit 2 hours. So on that note, I think we should probably just wrap things up here.
Really? You don't want to talk about the ROH taping?
I don't want to talk to you anymore. No.
No. All right.
So.
Well, I'll see you on Sunday or on Tuesday for the SmackDown, which means tomorrow during Raw. Don't call me for any reason.
I don't. When have I ever called you?
You text all the fucking time.
Yeah. I'm a text fiend.
Yeah. Well, let's go out with the Hulk Hogan bullshit of the week.
Excellent.
Excellent.
The Hulk Hogan bullshit of the week.
Week. I thought you were doing the Hogan bullshit.
No.
Okay, well then how about this? he's asked about why wrestlers die young. Hulk Hogan said, there's no single case where someone died from steroid use.
Really?
Yeah.
Not a single case.
Not a single case where someone has died from steroid use.
Crazy. Well, that's good to know, actually. That is very good to know.
We're taking them now.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Now? Okay. What?
Did they make ones that make you fatter?
Apparently.
A wheat steroid.
Yes. A wheatroid.
Yeah. All right. Let's
okay, so yeah, let's go. It's We Talk Wrestling, or at We Talk Wrestling on Twitter. WeTalkWrestling.com is our website. Emails, you can get me, Addy, at WeTalkWrestling.com, and Mo at WeTalkPodcast.com. So we've also got another show Mo does, We Talk Comics, as well as We Talk Fantasy Football. It's both found on the Podomatic network. We Talk Comics.
We Talk Fantasy Football is currently hosted by We Talk Comics, but last show on We Talk Fantasy Football, what we're doing is we're breaking down strategies. Every strategy you can basically imagine that people use while doing their draft. And we break down the strengths and weaknesses of all those for auction leagues and as well for the more traditional snake format. And it's about 75 minutes to listen to that, win your league, and then come back and try and take me on later.
Jake Roberts format, that'll be good. So, all right. Well, in the meantime, then, and in between time, that's it. Another edition of We Talk Wrestling. Good night, folks.